Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Brendan Cronin Willis. SP Futures up 26-25, trying to erase a down week last week. NASDAQ Futures up 115. Brendan, a couple of votes came in here. A quote here from a songwriter long ago. I used to be such a sweet, sweet thing till they got hold of me. And the votes are coming in that applies to Mr. Matt Weber.
Well, I heard he's such a good guy. Until you got a hold of him, are you the one that they got a hold, that got a hold of him?
I don't know. I hope it wasn't me. I think some of his buddies. It couldn't possibly have been me.
No, it's I mind my own business all weekend, and Chiefs running around with Trumpers all weekend, and then first thing on a Monday morning, or in this case a Tuesday morning, it's all I hear is Fox News drivel, and I can't take it.
So he's
and then by the middle of the week, then Chief gets back to normal, and then it's fine.
No, I just once in a while I have to, mention to him that there's other stuff going on in the world, and he all of a sudden can't respond too well. So it's just just saying.
Well, Alice Cooper used to spend some time in Chicago. There was a health club that used to be on Michigan Avenue at Michigan and Madison called the Charlie Club. And Alice Cooper was a member there, and I would see him sometimes just walking around the gym trying to work out a little bit.
Trying to work out. I don't imagine he was a big workout kind of guy.
He wasn't. He did a lot of walking around instead of working out.
Well, there's people that do that.
I know.
The former head of, actually, he was a terrific, real nice guy. I think he was a pretty damn good mayor. Remember Mr. Vacco, who was a head of Mayor of Beverly Park for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys, there was a health club, Evergreen Bath and Tennis, that had some really good handball courts and tennis courts, obviously.
I know where that is, on just east of California. Yeah. Was it 91st in California?
I think the high school bought them now or something. I don't think it's so. Anyway, he and his buddies would meet there every morning, have coffee. They were always in their workout outfit, and I don't think they ever once did anything, played any game whatsoever. They sat there and had coffee, mm-hmm. But they always got dressed like they were going to, which was kind of cool.
I'm sure when you walk around East Bank Club, you see a lot of folks doing the same thing.
Yeah, there was always a sort of a meeting kind of place, just sort of saying
mm-hmm. that. And I can see you as an East Bank kind of guy.
I actually was a member of the East Bank Club, and I'm going to say that this is not, technically, I guess I still am, because I just withdrew. I withdrew when it became impossible to park over there, and I joined the one mm-hmm. downtown. But I'm going to say I've never come close to a club as nice as that one.
Mm-hmm.
You could go in, but they had a quarter-mile track and an eighth-of-a-mile track. This is back when I would run. I'd run a couple miles, and I'd sprint the straightaways, walk the curves, and I had them. But they had every machine known to man. You didn't have to take any weights off of anything, because they had so many of them. There was a barbell that was, 150, 160, they were already made up. You just went and took the ones you wanted. You didn't have to monkey with any weights. So you could get a workout there so fast it was scary. I mean, it was just, everything was just mm-hmm. right there in front of you. And not to mention, they had the best handball courts, and they had a huge, they had these huge screens, and I've never been there, where they had a TV where you could go find the station you wanted to watch and sit there. But also, they had so many of those exercycles and so forth. You could find the best looking person and go stand behind, and then you get the machine right behind them. So, not that anybody would ever do such a thing, but on Friday night or Saturday night around, if you worked out about 5:30, if there were, let's just say, everybody's last gasp for a date for Saturday night, where if you got on one of the extra cycle, immediately there was somebody of the opposite sex on the cycle next to you. You know, and everybody had the, ladies had their makeup on for the, they put their makeup on before they'd work out, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it was interesting. I enjoyed it, but it was a great bar, good food. In fact, one of my friends from, the Excelsior went over there and ran their dining for a while. I mean, the stuff was great. Now I haven't been there in so long. We try and park around there now, though. Good luck with that. I'm talking 35 years ago. It was a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, they've got more parking over there now because they built that high-rise tower next to it. There's parking available there as well.
Okay. Well, what do you is the week starts out here, and we're starting to see my right wingers are kind of at me on some stuff in terms of when did this all start, Brendan? I mean, why do things just keep to me slide more and more downhill when you. In this country, when you vote, half the people vote against you, right? No matter who you are, mm-hmm. pretty much half. You know, whoever was the biggest, I'm going to say the biggest landslide in history was who was it, Johnson and Goldwater?
Was it Johnson and Goldwater, or was it Nixon versus McGovern?
One of the 72. Two. I thought Goldwater was
I think that McGovern might have only won one state.
He did win one state.
And that might have been Massachusetts. I don't think he even won his own state.
No, I don't think he won in Minnesota. But even then it was what? 45% or 42 voted for the other guy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't, the idea that, you know, I think to a certain extent, Obama, what was the predicator of him saying elections have consequences or something like that?
The Republicans, I think that might have been in his first term when he was pushing Obamacare. And he said when he was getting pushback from the Republicans, he said, well, elections have consequences. But it was a hauntingly prescient phrase to use,
yeah.
given especially where we are now, and
right.
it's one that had been repeated over and over and over again, especially by the Republicans since 2010 when they won back control of Congress.
It seems like now is anything anybody says now become a race to the bottom of the toilet or what? I mean, then Trump comes in and he doesn't want to give this. The same benefits to states that didn't vote against him, or voted against him,
mm-hmm.
which is unconscionable in my mind. But now, the hue and cry from the snipes in the Democratic Party and what they want to do to people who are Trump supporters, don't they realize what they sound like, Brennan? I mean, is it just me or what?
Well, they don't sound very, conciliatory, that's for sure. But, you know, at a certain point, you know, I think they're giving the Republicans back what they have felt for the last 10 years.
Okay, so now let's say that.
I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that it's repercussions of what happened before.
Well, okay, but now Biden bleeps up, which I think he probably will. I hope he doesn't, but he bleeps up. All right, so then. The Republicans, whoever thinks, had this huge loss in the last election, which they really didn't because they gained seats in the House. So in midterm elections, they win the House and they blow the Democrats out of the Senate. Now what? They have to do worse than the Democrats? I mean, at some point here, what do? Shoot the people who voted the other guy? The other guy? I mean, the idea is to not go down that road. Not to do it worse than the guy before you, or is that just me?
The idea is to really make some informed choices about what is good for the country, not just saying because you're for it, I'm against it. And not to say that my job, and this is a quote from McConnell, that my job is to make you, Joe Biden, well, paraphrasing, you, Joe Biden, a one-term president. And what goes in state with that is the potential re-election of Donald Trump again in 2024.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to come close.
There are a lot of people right now who think that could happen.
It might be somebody. I wouldn't have a problem with somebody from the outside in 2024, but I sure hope they're in the middle. and somebody could tell both sides and knock it off, who could that person be?
Well, I agree. When I look at the candidates, I think if anybody was close to being in the middle, it is Joe Biden. I think he, you know, given his history, he is pretty moderate from the Democratic side. I don't think he's going to be very far on the liberal side to bring about a lot of changes that the liberal Democrats really want. And I don't think he's going to be able to, given the split in Congress right now.
I'm not talking about, you know, moderate views. I mean, you know, Mickey the Mailman could have moderate views. I'm talking about somebody who can carry the pulpit and tell both sides to shut up. And I don't see Biden being that guy. I really don't.
Okay. Well, we'll see about that.
And I hope I'm right. I hope I'm wrong.
Whether he is or not, I think he is the closest to that we have on either side of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party at the moment.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, I thought Jimmy Carter was a terrific guy and had a lot of the right ideas, but he was ineffective.
Mm-hmm. True. I agree with you. I think Carter was a very smart guy, and he had some very good ideas. He had problems, and this is one of the problems of being an outsider, that he didn't know how to make Washington and Congress work with him or for him in his ideas. Plus, he got caught up in the Iran hostage situation towards the end of his first term. Plus, inflation was rampant under his administration.
Well, his issue was they didn't have any, and actually that particular military fiasco was the reason why you now have SEAL teams and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they ended up in, I think I was at Pullman at the time, and my buddies there, one of them was an engineer that had worked for Boeing and for, who made the Huey? It wasn't Boeing, it was somebody else.
I don't remember.
Was it Bell Helicopter?
Was it Bell and Howell?
Not Bell and Howell. Bell and Howell was a camera company. Bell Helicopter, I think it was. And they got
Bell Helicopter.
Anyway, they used the helicopters that everybody in the industry knew that if it was in a sandstorm, everything was going down. Because some general had his name attached to them. You know, that was helicopter. So somehow or another, they used those and the things. There was a sandstorm and they all went down. Right, and it was all Carter's fault, and which obviously it wasn't Carter's fault, I don't think, but it didn't work out so well. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
And
by the way, that was also a very polarized time because of and the reason Carter won, I think, in large part, was because Gerald Ford pardoned President Nixon.
Probably. Well, you know, I'm not so sure that you know, Tricky Dick, do you think he was going to go to jail?
Yes, I do think he was going to go to jail.
For what?
For obstruction of justice. When you get, and remember what was so different about the Nixon administration and the impeachment trial. Before he was formally tried in the Senate, before he was impeached, people like Barry Goldwater, one of the staunchest conservative Republicans, led a delegation to Nixon's office and told him, you got to resign, because
right.
If you don't, there will be a vote in the Senate. And currently composed, you will get maybe two or three votes in the Senate in your favor. And I, Barry Goldwater, will not be one of them. And he knew the handwriting was on the wall, and so he resigned. And then shortly after that, Ford pardoned him, and there was a huge backlash that I think helped dramatically to carry Jimmy Carter into the presidency.
Well, yeah. It would be hard for Ford, just thinking back to those days. First, you had Matt Weber's hero, his favorite politician of all time, Spiro Agnew, bowing out early, right?
Nattering nabobs of negativity.
Yeah, he would have loved that guy. He got thrown out because he was convicted and stuff before he got in office, right?
Yeah, when he was still the governor of Maryland.
Yeah, he was a sweetheart, that guy. How did Nixon ever pick him?
He used to be such a good guy until they got a hold of him.
Yeah, until we got a hold of him, yeah. So then Nixon, so it was like Ford would, you know, you just kind of get tarred with the same brush a little bit sometimes. You know, I happen to think, I'm going to say that of all the people present, I think I might have liked Jerry Ford some of the best.
I think he was the only person who was never elected president who served as president.
And I think he was a pretty honest man. I think he did a nice job.
I think he was a very honest man as well. He was the Speaker of the House for a while, if I remember correctly. He was head of the Republicans in Congress. But he was never elected either president or vice president. He was appointed to take over for Agnew in Nixon's second term, and he was never elected either president or vice president.
Maybe we should try that.
Maybe we should.
I don't know who'd be doing the appointing, but we have the election's done his stuff, and it doesn't seem like it ever wants to be over. I emailed you. Could you walk people through who exactly is in charge and what? Because on TV, all you hear about is people are still talking to McConnell. That's why I emailed you last night. Because is the schedule on all this stuff?
Mitch McConnell is still the Senate Majority Leader, and he will be until at least Thursday or Friday of this week. Currently, the Republicans are still in power in the White House because they currently have 50 to 49 majority. Because I'm not sure the status of Kelly Loeffler right now. But remember, Kelly Loeffler was serving out the unserved term of Johnny Isaacson, unlike David Perdue, who was up for re-election in his own right. So on January 3rd, the new Congress was sworn in. David Perdue's term ended then, so there's now a vacancy for that seat. I believe that Kelly Loeffler is still in the Senate as a senator from Georgia until her replacement is certified and sworn in, which means that the Republicans still have a 50-49 vote. And it's 49, unlike what I told you yesterday in my email, Chief, because yesterday Kamala Harris resigned her seat as a Democratic senator, creating another vacancy. But that is replaced by Padilla, the former Secretary of State of California, who was sworn in yesterday.
Are you get sworn in to the Senate in your state, or you got to get sworn in Washington?
No, you're sworn in Washington.
Okay.
But whatever it is, wherever you're sworn in as a senator. So right now, there's still the Purdue vacancy, and I think once the votes are certified in Georgia, which is supposed to be by 5 o'clock, on Thursday afternoon is the latest they can be certified under state law. Once they're certified, I think they are beyond the margin of an automatic recount. Unlike the presidential election in Georgia, there's no automatic recount. Both Loeffler and Perdue have resigned or have conceded their election races, so it's unlikely that they'll ask for a recount. But once the vote is certified, those two guys can be sworn in. The Senate will be a 50-50 split at that time between the Democrats and the Republicans. The deciding vote, therefore, would go to the Vice President, who at that time will be Kamala Harris. That means that McConnell is no longer the Majority Leader. It goes to whoever the Democrats elect, which is Chuck Schumer.
Well, where do the independents stand? Are you counting Bernie as a Democrat?
For this purpose, yes, because he votes with the Democratic caucus, and he will vote for Schumer. If there's a tie between Schumer and McConnell, Schumer will become the, if it really comes down to a 50-50 split, the determining factor will, like for future legislation for the next couple of years, be Kamala Harris, which would give the Democrats the majority and Schumer the majority.
But everybody has to, for all this stuff to happen, all these people still have to be there, right?
Yeah.
So every time there's a vote, Kamala Harris got to get her behind over there. It's not like in a regular Congress, how often does a vice president even show up, ever?
Really? Now, Pence was on call a few times when it looked like it was going to be close over the last 4 years. But typically, the vice president, he can preside or she can preside over the Senate, but she's not required to be there for all the votes.
So, but how often do they just show up to preside over it? Never?
Not unless they think there's going to be a closed vote, whether a vote may be needed.
So, like on a regular Tuesday that the Senate's in there debating, they're not there?
She won't be there, no.
Ever?
No.
Well, the Constitution, where they say they're the president of the Senate, but don't ever show up. Is that what it says in there?
Yeah, I mean, she's got other duties. She will have other duties as vice president, but I'm pretty sure that the vice president does not preside over the Senate on a regular basis.
Oh, I know they don't. I just was wondering if you go like 4 years without ever being there. I think you probably can.
I think you can.
And the president pro tem is what, like the oldest senator?
There's a seniority ranking, which is why Grassley is now there, and I think that it may be, again, with the majority party. So I think that Grassley will no longer be president pro tem of the Senate after the full complement of senators is sworn in. I think it'll be a Democrat as a senator, as a president pro tem.
I guess what I'm getting to in a long way here, I was going to say shortcut, too late. Is there always somebody sitting up there, running the Senate?
Yeah, usually it's a majority leader.
But he's not the president pro tem. Who gets to tell somebody when it's their turn to talk? I guess and just runs the gang, Local 12.
The Senate is a gentleman's club, so they're all very very nice to each other, in particular to each other, and we defer to each other in normal course. I'm joking about that.
Yeah.
It's the majority leader who presides over the Senate in the most part, I think.
Okay, so the president pro tem doesn't do it either. It's the majority leader.
Right.
Okay. I don't know where we got to that, but that's sort of interesting. So is there a chance that all this recrimination in the election about... somebody was giving me some story about... I'm probably one of my right-wingers. A couple of people have been booted out of faculties because they were Trump supporters and things like that. I mean... Lou says that's not even legal in some states. How the hell do you do that?
Wait, say that again.
Somebody was forced to resign.
Position?
Yeah, elected or positions in universities, and there's supposed to be some kind of petition. I don't know, one of the Ivy League schools. I don't know if it was Harvard or someplace but the students voted for Trump. They want out. Are we getting goofy here or what?
That's a little goofy, and I think that's part of the conspiracy theory. As I understand it, when teachers are tenured, there are very limited circumstances under which they can lose their tenure at a university.
I don't think this person was
voting
tenured.
Voting for somebody or voting for another person is not one of those requirements.
Your friend AOC wants to reprogram people who vote who were. Reprogram white supremacists. Of course, she gets to determine who's a white supremacist or not.
Mm-hmm.
Reprogram, is it? If I were to say something like that, would that... I don't think anybody who even comes into the show would want to be on the show with me. If she gets to do it?
That's another crazy statement from somebody who's very polarizing in her approach.
But if you were on the other side and said that, you'd be out.
No, if you're on the other side, there'd be another crazy person who is speaking improperly. I think both people should, if somebody on the other side made that same comment, then they should be treated the same way.
Yeah, but they aren't. I mean, you and I are in agreement on this, but they're not.
I think it depends on who's in power.
Yeah, and I think the part that was ever in power, I think the decency should be even. I know I'm not going to get there with that. Would that help?
I agree with you. I agree with you completely. That whichever side is in power should treat the other side with respect. And a recognition that just because their ideas are different doesn't necessarily mean that they're really bad people. Now, you can look behind what they're saying to see how they behave, to see if they should face retribution for something. But I still do believe in free speech in this country and the freedom of ideas. So long as they're not taken, but you should always respect the ideas of the other person to begin with. When I started out practicing law, my mentor, the guy who started my law firm, used to tell me in negotiations, when negotiations were getting really hot, he would try to calm things down. He'd take a drag on a cigarette. He was a chain smoker, but he would take a drag on a cigarette, and he would say, you know, before we go further, I have to be able to tell you, to your satisfaction, what your position is. And you have to tell me, to my satisfaction, what my position is. without vitriol, without yelling and screaming, and that way we know, we both know that we're on the same, using the same language in the same way to go ahead. Once we can do that, once you can tell me my position and I can tell you your position, we've got a starting point for negotiation because we know we're using the same terms with the same meanings.
How about, I would agree with that, but how about something a little more, I don't really want anybody, I don't really care, to be honest with you, Brendan, if these people have this esoteric, somewhat religious background mind where you try and treat the other person decent. I just want them to have a little common sense, like in what goes around comes around. And if mm-hmm. the more you push, and I don't know if, Maddie, if you were a honeymooners kind of guy, the immortal words of Ed Norton, you gotta be nice to people when you come out of the sewer because you meet the same people going back down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somewhere in AOC's lifetime, they're gonna lose an election again. Now, does she want to be treated like this? Like she seems to want to treat other people? I mean, I'm not asking for her to like the other side. I'm saying at least have a common sense to know that however you treat somebody, it's eventually going to be how you're treated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Well, remember, that was the same kind of a thing that Mitch McConnell said.
Yeah.
When the Democrats used the power that they had to get federal judges through the Senate under the Obama administration, and they changed that vote from a 60 vote necessary for confirmation to a simple majority. McConnell told the Democrats at that time, told Harry Reid, who was in charge of that change, that be careful what you wish for because you're not always going to be in power. Now, at the time, that still might have been a time when the Democrats had 59 senators in the Senate, so they were pretty close to getting their majority for people pushed through. But McConnell said, you know, you're going to regret this. And sure enough, in relatively short order, the Republicans gained control of both the White House and the Senate and pushed through a tremendous number of judges on a simple majority.
Yeah, but wasn't the pre-story there that McConnell wasn't letting any of Obama's people through no matter what?
Well, that's true.
Well, that sucks,
and
too.
That's very true. That was the reason why Reid and the Democrats forced that change because of the obstructionists. The Republicans weren't letting any judges through, and there were a tremendous number of vacancies that throughout the country and all the federal courts.
Well, one of the most, I know we got to let you go in a second, but one of the most eerie things I've ever read, maybe I don't know if you remember this, I think it was with Tricky Dick's two daughters, one of them married the Eisenhower, right? And the other one married some other guy. It wasn't an Eisenhower.
The other one married Chuck Robb, the governor of Virginia.
Well, he's now in some kind of think tank somewhere, right? He's a pretty bright guy, and he wrote this article, and I read most of it on the air one day. I'm sure I could still find it. They asked him, what about people's, what's going on now? The bitterness and the fighting back and forth. And he said, when are people gonna get themselves together? And he said, it's going to be a while because we haven't hit bottom yet. If we're not hitting bottom pretty close here, what's the bottom going to look like? Like armed conflict or what? I mean, we got to be getting pretty close to a bottom. We're totally flat-ass broke. We're spending trillions of dollars we don't even have. We turn a print press on, which nobody would have done since the history of government. We didn't even do it during the war, for God's sake. And we got people sniping each other, and we got people wanting to reprogram people. I mean, how far away are we from bottom? I hope not too far, Brennan.
Well, you know, you often don't know bottom until you reach it and start coming back up, so we don't know yet.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you next week. SB Futures up
yeah,
24.
You're going to Washington as a guest of Biden for the inauguration tomorrow. Are you going to be up in the dais with him?
Oh, God, no. I thought maybe you would be. You're a big shot. NASDAQ Futures up 103. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck,
Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Sir Joel and Conan with us. Maddie, did you look and see the U-Haul and see if Joel knows this while I'm doing this other stuff? Which state now has the most destinations of people with U-Haul going both ways? One way, just one way.
To their state?
To their state.
During the pandemic, I assume?
Well, during the last year. Of course, you could make the...
Somewhere warm, I can tell you that.
Now, one of the first things should pop into your mind. They didn't have movers, so they probably weren't as rich as some of the other people. So maybe that should affect your state pick here. Just saying. S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 101. You always got to be careful when you have these little questions. Is it just what you're asking? Dow futures up 191. We're in Europe, we got the DAX up 44.3%, so not a lot. FTSE's only up 1, so call that flat. CAC ran up 3, call that flat. So they're not kind of going with us here this morning, but they weren't down like we were last week either. So Nikkei, which has been amazingly volatile here, and I don't exactly know why. We're going to get this information out of Joel and Kenny, but we're up 391 today. That's 1.4%. Shanghai down 29. That's 0.8%. We got Hang Seng up 779, 2.7%. So, not exactly sure why that dichotomy is there, but it is. Wave review Friday, Dow was down 177, S&P down 27, NASDAQ down 114. So Friday was a down day. Today we got bonds up 1 point to 111. Again, which is a lot higher than it has been, but that's a 10-year, 1.11%. The Bund, minus 0.51. Japan, wow, with a big push up to 0.04. It's been 0.03 for days on end, it seems. Oil up 21 cents, 52.55. Brent up 64 cents, 55.39. Natural gas down 7 cents, 266. RBOB 153, sort of unchanged. We got gold up 979, 1839, right in the middle of this range. Silver up 44 cents. Silver has been very volatile within a range. It hasn't broken out of the range either way, but it's been flying back and forth, very, very odd. Silver up is at 25.31. Copper up 2 cents, 3.62. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet coming in to downtown this morning on a shortened holiday week for a lot of folks. So no delays on any of the area expressways. We have one crash in the area that's in the southwest suburbs. Route 83 at 63rd Street is our only crash. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy and cold. Some snow flurries in the area. We'll reach a high of 29. Right now it is partly cloudy and 22 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today and a high of 73. Right now it's overcast and 61. In sports, the Bulls have won two in a row. They're now 6-8 on the year. They topped the Rockets at home 125-120. Suns lost to the Grizzlies in Memphis 108-104. In hockey, the Blackhawks were off. They're at the Panthers tonight. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time puck drop. Coyotes lost to the Golden Knights 4-2. Chief.
So what's the story in hockey? They decided to be like college hockey where you play the same team twice now?
Yeah, they're really doing the geographic thing. So the Blackhawks played Tampa twice, and now they're in South Florida to play the Miami or the Florida Panthers, and they're going to knock all their Florida teams off first, it looks like.
In college, they would do that. I mean, the Irish should go play Michigan or Michigan State, then you go drink in their saloon on Friday night, and then you have another game Saturday, and you come home.
Yeah, makes sense.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Chief. How are you on this this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing all right. The one game that they would have a problem with is when they went to Minnesota Duluth, which I think was in Houghton, Michigan, which I think is on the border of Lake Superior. I don't even think you wanted to go out to the bar there, so cold. Just saying.
Keith, you've been going out to bars. I haven't been out to a bar in I can't even remember. I didn't go out to bars much when you could go out to bars.
I can't say because like going to speakeasies. Let's just say some of the burbs are wide open.
Really?
And I challenge anybody to say that in those burbs, people have more COVID than where they're closed. Just saying.
I think our restaurants are opening up February 1st, so, I'm going to wait to, before I start doing a whole lot of that, I think I'll wait to get the vaccine. Lisa's gotten both doses of the Pfizer Moderna one. And
good for her. Do you have any reaction? I hope not.
No. The first one, absolutely nothing. The second one, you know, arm was a little sore and a little queasy, but nothing material.
You know when they, which I should have known, I guess, you know, you can be a big dummy all the time, that when they give you the test, whether you get the placebo versus the other one, they give you something of the placebo to make your arm sore so you don't think you got the placebo.
We gotta pick that roll up out. I mean, the market seems to be, you know, very positive about absolutely everything. Had that sell off on Friday and battled back on, you know, tested that low Sunday night. I don't know how many of your participants are out there Sunday night and Monday, but they tested that low and we're back firmly green to start the week. So just within striking distance to all-time highs. You know, a little trepidation about what's going to happen at the inauguration, but so far, crude's bringing the market up, Bitcoin's up, metals, I know, they're kind of, I'm kind of getting sick of looking at the metals, but all indications here are starting the week out on a good note.
Yes. I sure wish there would come a day, Joel, where I could just celebrate the market. That every time we have this good note stuff, it's becomes one of our bumps. And this week it's the bump, as Janet Yellen, that we have to think big, we have to think in trillions of dollars. If we drive the money supply up another 25% this year, 30, 40, 50, whatever it is, why does anybody think that the market's even going up? It's the dollar going down.
That's true. I mean, you know, also there's a couple of things that, you know, the people are worried about. And, you know, one thing that we've been talking a lot about, you know, inflation, starting to see that a little bit. But, you know, it's one thing that Biden said during his speech one night last week was he wasn't going to measure his success by Wall Street, right? He was going to measure it by Main Street. So that could mean a couple different things. It could mean, you know, higher corporate taxes, which, you know, the market, I don't think, would receive well. Also, and I don't know how much you've talked about it, but my partner and I talk about it on our show, is the financial transaction tax. And if that goes through in the way that it is currently being talked about, that will have one of the most devastating impacts of the markets. More devastating than the financial, it would be like the financial crisis and the pandemic combined, because you would lose all liquidity in the market. So I don't know where it stands on that. I think Biden has a couple other things on his plate before it gets to that. But if you want a clear and concise get the hell out of the market sell signal, I mean, get the hell out, that would be the passing of the financial transaction tax.
Do you think, how can I phrase this? They've been totally ineffective at keeping the market, I'm going to use the term, straight. Now, it doesn't mean that when you buy a stock that somehow or another it's a horrible thing for you. It's not, because obviously that's what I do for a living. And but the way that the market has evolved, the way the execution part has evolved, basically with the two stools of preferencing and kickback, doesn't affect you at all if you're buying a stock and going to hang on. It doesn't really affect my people at all either, because we know how to, you know, I mean, we know where to, we'll go to the exchanges with the best bids and offers, those kinds of things. But by and large, the idea that every single trade is two trades. Somebody trades ahead of it and then trades against it. The SEC and these people are totally powerless to seemingly to do it. And I think in some of their minds, Joel, and I don't agree with them, I agree with you, in some of their minds, if we put a tax on it, where if the firm preferences the order flow for the, you know, 100 shares of Disney or whatever it is, then has to turn around and trade it twice, that if they have to pay that tax, that we'll effectively stop them from doing that way without ever finding a way to just tell them to stop doing it.
Well, I mean, you could also look at that as a double negative.
Yeah, a double negative, sure.
If these market makers get to be exempt from it, then narrows the playing field, and takes more liquidity providers on the market if you give a market maker exemption. So. Can't worry about it right now. Can't lose any sleep over it. But if you're looking for one definitive thing that can really knock the market off its keister, is the financial transaction tax.
I would agree. Hey, Big Ten, who's the best team?
You know, I would like to say Michigan. They did take it on the chin from Minnesota. I mean, you got to respect Iowa with Luka Garza. They're so well coached. And Illinois got the hops. So... Michigan took, like I said, took its tumble. But man, there's some three good. I mean, the Big Ten, they're going to start beating up on each other. And I know Michigan, they weren't going to go undefeated, and they're in a couple losses. Just ending on a football note, very happy with the running backs coach hire about Mike Hart. You remember Mike Hart, right?
Yeah, great player.
Yeah, they brought him as RB coach, and then they brought in a linebacker coach, a very well-respected NFL assistant, Mike McDonald, to run the defense. So Harbaugh, these are two changes that he made, and these might be his last chances as assistant coaches. So somewhat optimistic. And also, how about those Michigan quarterbacks on Saturday and Sunday?
Oh, yeah.
How about that? How about Chad Henne?
Yep.
How about Tom Brady? How about those? That's the most Michigan football excitement I've had since 1997, man. I was going absolutely crazy.
These coaches you're hiring, can they suit up and play?
Two names, and you jot this down. J.J. McCarthy from IMG Academy. He will be our starting quarterback. You watch the clips on YouTube. Donovan Edwards from my hometown of West Bloomfield, Michigan. Three touchdowns and a double overtime victory over Belleville. He is the real deal. He is going to be coached by Mike Hart. So two freshmen. I know it's going to be hard to lead with freshmen last year, but the entire Michigan community needs to lean on J.J. McCarthy and Donovan Edwards. Check them out. I've never been so excited about a player coming in since Charles Woodson.
What's Belleville? Is that the penal league?
Belleville's a town just outside of Ann Arbor, and it's won the state chip. So you know they have all the different classifications.
I thought that's maybe where Ricky and whatever the movie
Longest Yard.
the baseball movie where he was in the penal league.
The Natural.
Belleville, you check out.
Tom Berenger.
Edwards, and you check out J.J. McCarthy and.
All right,
that's what I got to lean on. Our hockey team's looking pretty good, too, though.
Yeah, so. Yes, it is. SP Futures up 26.
You're talking about Major League.
Yeah. Well, he was in the penal league, right?
Charlie Sheen was.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen. SP Futures up 99. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They're located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley. This is Matt Weber on the board. Nasdaq futures up 26. Nasdaq futures up 101. So we're trying to come back with last week's losses. And we have Janet Yellen running all over the place telling people trillions of dollars. We need more. Think big. Think big, Kenny.
Think big. And that's exactly what Janet Yellen's going to tell the Senate Finance Committee today on top of, you know, what we heard from Joe Biden and his team last week. And what we fully expected, I think what the market fully expected also was that, you know, we'd heard talk of this big stimulus plan. So the market was semi-prepared for a big plan. And, you know, his announcement of $1.9 billion on top of the $900 billion and on top of what's expected to come by the end of March will probably bring this stimulus package to closer to $4 trillion, which is even more than what Nancy Pelosi was arguing for back in October, November, which, you know, they were pushing for three. But now that it's evenly split, and as long as everyone votes along party lines, you know, they could push this thing to $4 trillion. And Janet Yellen will do that today as she encourages the Senate to go all in.
All right, so now if you look at the real number, I don't quite get the, maybe you can edumacate me, as my grandmother used to say. I'm going to kick up my debt clock, but they claim that our deficit is, what, $21 trillion, but then there's another number that says real deficit that's 25. Do you have any idea what the hell that means?
No, I have none, but I'm going to, now after we get off the phone, I'm going to look it up and try to figure
out. Yeah. I'll dig it here, but anyway, so now if we start talking about an interest rate, because I think the difference between, well, I'm reading into it, which of course I shouldn't do, Kenny, but the difference between the enthusiasm of this amount of money that they're running off the printing press,
and the
other would be the interest rates are starting to move,
and
I think people are a little more worrisome about this. Here I've got U.S. national debt at 20. We're up to 27. And then then it says here, and this is what I don't the U.S. The federal budget deficit actual this year is $4.5 trillion, but the regular deficit is $3.1 trillion. And I don't get that they're talking about off balance sheet stuff and everything. I don't have a real says the on and off budget federal activity exceeds the annual revenue collected by the federal government. I mean, how could we be 50% higher off balance sheet? Are we becoming a federal Bear Stearns here, or what are we doing? I mean,
listen, they're going to do what they're going to do to try to solve it. That's what they ran on the Democrats. That they promised. In fact, they're going to do. I think the issue is going to be how they're going to get themselves out of it, and they're going to inflate their way out of it over what I would imagine is going to be over the next number of years. And, you know, you and I discussed this, I think, last week. You know, what I'm afraid of is it's going to go back to what it was in the late 70s, early 80s, when, you know, interest rates were 21%, inflation was running at 13%, and unemployment was running at 10%, because I don't really see any other way that they're going to get themselves out of this without using inflation to their advantage at some point, right?
Yeah, except now that you're here, Kenny, the national debt, what was the national debt in 1980? I'd love to quiz you because you know all the answers.
I'd have to look that up because off the top of my head, I'm sure it's nowhere near where it is.
It's $858
billion. Yeah, $858 billion is like a drop in the bucket. Now, they just passed that $900 billion package 2 weeks ago, like without a blink of an eye.
And that was package short, right?
Right.
That was package minor. All right, so the difference is if we run up, so the federal government was paying 10% on that debt, so it was $85 billion a year, which was a lot of money, right? But now, if we go to 10% now, I don't see how we come out of it. We're talking about $2.7 trillion is the interest payment.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't understand it either, and I don't necessarily profess to sit here and be able to explain it. It's going to be a very interesting time, because I don't think anyone really understands how we're going to get out of it. And I think they're just, you know, flying by the seat of their pants. Janet Yellen came out, and part of her prepared testimony says, you know, because rates are so low, the country shouldn't think about it. They should just go all in, because it's going to cost next to nothing, quote unquote, to finance it. Was the implication that she was giving? That might be true today, but certainly not going to be true as, you know, we move through the next couple of years and rates spike. That's the fear, right? And then what's it look like?
Well, the federal, here's the one I think you want to, don't ever go to this page, Kenny, because it'll just aggravate you like it does me. The federal debt to GDP ratio. Right now, I bet you could make a stab at it exactly. We're 130%, right?
Yep. Yep.
You know where we were in 1980?
No. Where?
34.
We were at 34 in 1980, and it's 130 today?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, there's a big difference.
I'm not sure why nobody sees anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I don't. And at some point here, and I'm not a big proponent of Bitcoin because I don't think anything has any value. But
right. But
I'm on record totally as saying we're being. I don't know, Kenny. Why don't I mean Maddie's mad at me for saying this stuff these days, but we're being lied to from both sides. Like there's no tomorrow. When are we going to get off? When I say we. The government and the press, which I guess you and I are part of,
yeah.
When are we going to get off talking about, like today we're saying that the dollar is down or the dollar is up.
Right.
When are we going to have a brain fart and everybody on CNBC and Fox News and Bloomberg say, wait a minute, this is not a relative game. It's like, if I go to I could stand to lose a few pounds, I've been making some progress, but if I ever want to look skinny, I'll go to a Wisconsin State Fair.
Right.
But that doesn't make me skinny.
Right.
On a relative scale, I look like Twiggy, you know? I'm just saying. But that's not the point. I mean, we have to stop talking about that the dollar is going up in relation to the pound or what they're doing in Central Europe, the euro dollar.
Right.
They're all of them are running to the bottom of the toilet as fast as they can.
Right.
So that's and obviously Bitcoin's not the number. It should be traditionally has been the metals, but it appears that somehow or another that's not working either, because there must be a liquidator someplace in gold or silver, because they really haven't. They moved some, but not to the extent where you expect them to. But but somewhere along the line here, there needs to be somewhat of a gauge, and you can almost look at the stock market as a gauge. I mean, are these companies?
Yeah, can you look at it as a gauge, or is the stock market kind of not trading with reality as well, right? Because there's an argument about that, right? That the stock market's so inflated because of what's going on at the Fed and stimulus and monetary policy. And once you start to normalize monetary policy and interest rates, what's going to happen to the stock market?
Well, that's my point, Ken. I mean, I'll say this, and I think you'll agree with me, that if everybody in the country walked into their nearest Federal Reserve with Washington's and came out with Jefferson's, you walked in with a $1 bill and they gave you a two, that everything would just double. It wouldn't do anybody any good. The market would double, earnings would double, your paycheck would double, everything would double, but you didn't get anywhere. Because nobody believes that if you just double the amount of money out there, you would double the prosperity.
Right.
I mean, nobody believes it. Yeah, but now we're in this never-never land. What if you nudge it up 25%, which we just did, which is double what we did in World War One, double what we did in World War Two? I mean, did the market really go up 25% last year, or did the dollar just go down 25%?
Right.
I mean, but I don't know how to... You can't make that call. First of all, if that's happening, you absolutely have to be in the market, because otherwise your currency in the bank is going down, right?
Exactly right.
So, but I mean, did you... You gained in relation to other people, but did you really gain? It's like my Mexican friends years and years ago that came up here. We were doing a seminar, Kenny, and they devalued the peso. And I said, I feel bad for you people. What are you talking about? We knew it was coming. We moved our money overseas. We moved it back to Mexico. We're 10% richer than the guy next door. Okay.
Right.
I mean, so right now you need to be in something that's going up. You need to be in housing, but you got to get out today before it moves. But you got to be
careful in housing. Yeah. You know, you're right, because housing is going to move. I think housing, I have my own opinion about housing. I think housing is really way overextended, and I think you have to start to see it pull back. People just can't afford it. They just can't afford these continued high prices unless they start writing 50-year mortgages.
Okay, I still have a piece of paper. If I ever find it, I'd send it to you. In 2007, somebody wrote an article about how 85% of the people in the country can't afford the median house.
Right.
And now, once you get to there, it's just a matter of time. And I think,
right, correct.
And I think we're sort of there, but assets go up when the dollar goes down. Right? I mean, that's just the way the world is. I mean, look what's happening.
Janet Yellen's going to argue today that the intention is not to force the dollar lower, because that's also part of her, part of her prepared testimony. So it's going to be interesting to see how she discusses that.
Well, but I mean, that's all BS. I mean, we know
right.
that. So, by the way, were you the guy, speaking of inflation, were you and Matty Weber the twosome that bought the Mickey Mantle 1952 card for $5.3 million last week?
No. It was not me, although I did see that.
What is it?
It's amazing, right? No, but it was not me.
It doubled in what, 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah.
No inflation. Okay. Kenny, take care of yourself. When do you come back on TV?
Week.
I don't want to miss you.
Say it again?
When are you coming on TV? I don't want to miss you.
I'll let you know. I'll give you a heads up.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 27. NASDAQ Futures up 101. Do we have Jeff or Mike?
We'll have Jeff after the break, I believe.
Cool. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Remember, we're on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph with us from Luckbox Magazine. SP Futures up 28, NASDAQ Futures up 106. We're trying to make back the loss from last week, and we're also trying to celebrate Janet Yellen. Think big. Think big, Jeff. I want you to think big for us today.
Thinking big. Good morning, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing good. Think big. I know. Mm-hmm. If that means by the larger Snickers bar when you go in the gas station, I don't know, but it's something.
You can't do that anymore, right? The big gulp? Big gulp? No, I think those days are over.
That was New York, I think, that they said you couldn't do that. There was a guy who ran for president, spent a bazillion dollars, and got one vote. What was his name? Bloomberg.
Your buddy Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about it?
It's
and still a dollar per vote. To be written.
Yeah, dollar per vote. It was a. How'd he do?
How'd he do? How'd he do? So, how's our governor doing? What do you think?
Which governor are we talking about?
Here.
How's he doing? Well, I don't know. He's doing the same. The guy in New York wants to start buying vaccines directly. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah, I did.
I was looking at
some of the same data that everyone's seen this morning about Illinois, about the amount of vaccines that have been distributed and how many have been implemented, and then, of course, the debate over the manner of distribution. So I was wondering what your thought is.
Talk me down on this one. I don't understand why, when things are, to me, somewhat simple, it would just be, I don't know, but again, this goes back to my Pullman roots. Someplace, somewhere, you need worker bees, and you got to get people to stop talking, Jeff. And the idea that, to me, I would have gone, the nursing homes, okay, we got to get there first. Those are where people are dying, right? Over 45% of people, so... Unless there is some plan to knock off the old people and help with the Social Security, which, a bunch of people have lobbed at me to the point where I wasn't the only person who had that view there for a little bit, that what are we really doing here? Anyway, why can't you just go through a hospital? Why can't you just say, okay, we're going to give every hospital the responsibility of the nursing homes around them in a, 10-square-mile area? Go do it. I mean, this is not... I don't think it's all that rocket science. You need... two or three people in a van, and off you go, right? I mean, why does there always have to be, we're going to do it in the United Center, we're going to have Walgreens do it, we're going to have CVS do it, and all these negotiations, and then somebody talks the next day, and then the lady from Walgreens was on last week, and she talked for 2 hours on CNBC, and I'm going, does it have to be this big, Jeff? I mean, why, they give polio shots in the gym when I was a kid. Why, every square mile in Chicago has a Catholic church and a regular school. Why don't we just plan those places for certain days and everybody go? But what does all this other crap have to be just to get people on TV? And whenever I see all these people on TV, the governor with 15 people behind him, my question is, and I know this is becoming an old cynical whatever, don't those people have a job? Why do they have to stand up behind this guy? Why can't we just, should they be out doing, they'd be much more effective going out, putting a shot in people's arms and sitting there behind the government.
That is their job. Well, there's two factors of distribution, right? It's just how and to whom. So you're focused on the how right now, and that's true. Why is it so complicated when there's so many opportunities of, convenient public access, distribution points? It'd be a simple thing to manage, and New York, I think, gave the other states an advantage out of the gate because they saw that they were having that difficulty. So there's very little excuse for only one third of Illinois' vaccines to be distributed at this point, considering that
we saw in the very early days that New York just had not figured out the logistics of the how, right? So you had that opportunity to say, hey, maybe we should be focused on this. And then the other question, of course, is to whom, and you'd think that would be simple too, but of course, you know, they find, you know, politics and advocacy finds a way to complicate that. So in the state of Illinois, I'm looking at the data right now, as of 3 days ago, 89% of COVID victims in Illinois were at age 60 or older. So 89% of all deaths at age 60 or older. And you would think that it'd be that simple to say, you know, that's where your focus needs to be. So in Illinois, and there's even a good argument to make, and I'm sorry if it doesn't sound politically correct. I'm not sure what the term is. And,
careful, they're coming after you now. Coming after you now. You're on a list.
No. When you're refuting this, I'm not sure, you know, what... But there's even a very strong argument to make that frontline workers should not take priority over elderly. The data makes that argument. Some people may not like the idea because these are the people who are putting themselves out there working, you know, exceptional hours and under undue strain. And I get that argument. But if you're just looking at the science and the math only, you would not give frontline workers priority over elderly people. And
well, the people,
and that's being done because the initial age bars is set higher, even though 89% of the deaths are over age 60. The other thing that's been thrown in the mix is prisoners in Illinois, and that's strictly a political decision. And again, the data does not value that. So those decisions are being made under the umbrella of equity, which is now a new word that basically says,
yeah.
You know, that's a discretionary overlay. You know, think of the investment manager, right, who's strictly quantitative. Well, I've got a black box, I'm a quantitative manager, but I have a discretionary overlay. Well, that means you're not a quantitative trader.
Right.
You have a discretion. It's well, that simple. You can't be both. You're one or the other.
Well, wait a minute. All rules are made for other people. It's like you can't get a haircut, but I can.
Well, yeah, there you go. So something simple, right, two elements. How and to whom has already been complicated and compromised in the state of Illinois. And
well, what do you think of? I was at.
I'll tell you a fun, quick story. Yesterday, I had to drive my daughter down to University of Illinois, and due to some bad planning, logistical planning ourselves, we had to. We felt compelled to take a personal stop prior to completing the complete drive. So. We're on 57, and nature's calling, and we both say, yeah, let's
a little too much coffee. You know, that's what happens. You get the extra large and not the medium when you head off on a drive.
Exactly. All right, so you're back to size again.
Yes.
All right, I get it, Chief. Size matters. And then we have to pull over, and we're looking around for a place. And I'm not going to say where, but we pulled off, and we're driving for a little bit, and we were in no particular hurry, and we found a little town. I won't say the name of the town because of the story, but population 1062, has basically two little stores in its main street. One's a hardware store and one is a diner type store. So we go into the diner. It's filled with people, for a small town that size. TV's on, everyone's watching it. There has to be, say 30 to 35 people in this diner, but you know, the equivalent of the whole town seems to be in there. This is probably around 10:30. No one's wearing masks. We walk in, we're wearing masks, and people could not be nicer. They know we're just, you know, using their facility. Bought a couple of muffins just to do the right thing, to take them in the car. Place was clean. Place was busy. They had a big sign in their door, Pritzker sucks.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, tell me about the sign. They said, well, Pritzker sucks. Nobody cares about us. In fact, how'd you even find us? I'm like, well, we didn't find you. It just came down to the hardware store or you. And so you weren't looking for a diner? I said, no, not particularly. Well, you wouldn't have found us if you were, because we're not allowed to have signs on the expressway. Because if we do, we have to go through this certain agency, and that would require us to spend $3,200, of which we can't buy a sign for $3,200 unless, you know, so nobody knows where we are. And I said, oh, it's a great place. We'd stay and, you know, eat it for, but, you know, we're going back and forth with my daughter. We'll be back all the time. And then they wanted to get back to talking about the governor. And everybody in there was engaged in the conversation. And it just reminded me that these are the people, and they, you know, they made the point of, we don't mind anyone wearing masks. We think it's great because we don't know what other people are bringing into our community, but we have not had a single case of COVID
that they know of.
One down here.
That they know of.
You know, not one, right? So it's just a reminder of different people with different perspectives. All they know is that they weren't open, and of course they weren't supposed to be open to the capacity that they were serving in there, so they were violating state mandates. And that was clear, and they didn't care. But they said, you know, if we weren't open, they're only open till 11 o'clock every day anyways. So this is, you know, it's just an indication of...
They weren't open. Where would anybody in town get breakfast?
Well, if they weren't open, no, nobody would get breakfast. It's just a reminder that there's another, you know, unfortunately, there is another America that seems to be a little forgotten.
It's totally forgotten. And,
that's who these people were.
I was on the South Side this weekend and had dinner Saturday night, out. At breakfast yesterday, out. Inside. I challenge... I feel like I go to a speakeasy.
You're such a renegade.
Oh, I know. But you know what? I challenge anybody to tell me that in those communities that the COVID's worse than other places. And as I drove around downtown Saturday afternoon, or late evening, say 5 o'clock, and I went by all these places... There's Glasgow's that's closed. There's the Athenian Room that's closed, and the place.
Glasgow's is closed for permanently.
Well, they were closed 5 o'clock on Saturday. There's no tent or anything. They don't have any room to put a tent up.
Yeah.
I mean, and I went to the Tripoli. Now those guys lucked out. They got the big backyard area. They got the nice tent out there, and I went there with my attorney buddy and his wife Friday night, and they gave everybody a blanket. You went outside, and it's a little chilly, but not horrible, and. And they got four heaters, and, you know, it was 30, what was it, Friday night, Maddie? 38, 39, it was fine. You know, if it was 5 degrees outside, I think you might have a problem, but 39, I mean, but by the time we left, you know, your feet are a little cold. But it wasn't horrible, and everybody loves the people, so, but I mean, if you just had a regular straight storefront, I mean, I don't know what you do. I mean, you're just out. I mean, unless you got enough people to do a carry out, but there's no, if somebody were to tell me that there was a big difference, I mean, I look at this California situation, everybody out there is wearing a mask. And they're all getting it anyway. I mean, is it working or isn't it? And if it did work, if I have mine on, what do I care if you got yours on for?
And in Florida, of course, it's wide open season, and no one wants to talk about Florida anymore, but
right.
Florida has really proven to, in terms of its economy, maintaining its economy the best and having kind of gotten through the main threat of COVID at this point, Florida's actually operating pretty well.
I just
hate to see Glasgow's go. I have mixed emotions.
I don't think they're out. I think they own the place.
My worst fight ever was in Glasgow's. Oh, I made the mistake of sitting on the wrong bar stool, on the wrong leather jacket, next to the wrong girl. and that was
that happens,
with a,
you know,
sucker punch to the chin when I was ordering a drink. So
that happens. Well, that doesn't happen. Yeah. Hopefully, that doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't. I wish the stuff was somewhat science, and it sort of isn't. I mean, my view from the get go, Jeff, and again, I've been jaundiced by this since day one. As soon as I read the articles from over in Asia, not China. That said, for a period of time, that this particular disease is 1,000 times more contagious in some people, than SARS, and yet, what percentage of people were going to die? I felt that from day one, it was not containable, and at the end of the day, you were going to wreck the economy and you were going to get nowhere. And I didn't want to be right in that, but I think I'm pretty close to being right in that. At the end of the day, an awful lot of people still got it, and you got the economy wrecked, and I'm not so sure. Although I will say this, in my own criticism, the virus, anybody who thinks that the virus right now, looking at the numbers, is the same as it was in March or April, the virus clearly has mutated into something that's probably more contagious, but it's a lot less deadly. I mean, the numbers just bear that out. Now, it's hard to be specific on that because our treatment of it has gotten a lot better, right? To where you're right. Matter of fact, get a little of this. Audrey, who's been on the show a bunch of times, she has a friend. His mother or father just died from something that the person has had, like, forever. I don't know what it was, some kind of cancer or whatever. And on the death certificate, of course, says COVID. But she's enough, whoever this lady is enough of a pistol to say, she made the hospital change it. She says, you're not getting extra money on my mother or father. They didn't have COVID. Get that off there. Mm. And the hospital did, after fighting it.
Yeah, there's a real question. I've heard of that anecdotally in many circumstances. It causes you to question the accounting.
Well, the thing I don't get, Jeff, is that I don't know. You and I, the people who come on the show, I think are somewhat upper crust in the sense that they learned some stuff when they were younger and they continue to learn. They haven't shut themselves out of things. And I think when you do things, and I can, my education, I mean, I'm really thankful for it because the older I get, the more every class I took seems to have some relevance. It didn't at the time. And I know one of the ones I took was had to do with designing executive packages, executive compensation packages, and using money as a way to motivate people to do essentially the right thing or what you want them to do, and how difficult that really is. And of course, we launched from there into writing rules and regulations that try and move people in the right direction, into motivating people, okay, to do the right thing. And it is incredibly difficult to do. And you really need to, every time you do something, you have to look forward and say, okay, what if I do this? What's it going to motivate? What is it going to mean 5, 10, 20 years from now? And I honestly believe that the people we are electing now, and I don't know if it's the electoral process, and maybe we always did. I just didn't, you know, there wasn't enough communication where you didn't know essentially how dumb half of them are. Or they're not dumb in the sense they got elected. They have a skill set. And they're clearly not dumb at all. They have a skill set you and I don't have because we're not governor, right? Obviously. And, or president or representative or anything. You were not even dog catcher, for God's sake. So you can't ever say they don't have a skill set. I mean, they're not dumb as in stupid. But when it comes to, they'll say things like, they don't push it forward. Now, if somebody were to say, okay, these hospitals are getting buried with this COVID, which they were. The University of Michigan, I mean, our friend Joel was just on, they were losing a ton of money, Jeff, as a university. And somebody would say, well, the kids aren't in school, of course they're losing money. That wasn't the reason. Michigan's got, what, five hospitals, four hospitals? Mm-hmm. And more people got laid off in hospitals and everything other than the COVID ward than virtually any other industry outside the hospitality industry. And hospitals make their money with elective surgery, right? I mean, the cath lab is the cash cow of every hospital, isn't it?
Sure.
And so if all that's out, I mean, that for, you know, emergency heart attacks, it probably wasn't, but for all your other stuff, it was. All that stuff's out. So for somebody to say, the perfectly legitimate reason, God, we got to, if these people are taking care of people from COVID, we need to bump up the Medicare bona COVID patient from, because Medicare, you know, is a negotiated rate. It's lower than insurance companies pay usually, correct? I mean, you know more about this than I do because you did the article in the Luckbox. We're gonna give these guys a 20 or 25% bonus if the person isn't there for COVID. And I'm going to say, Jeff, that absolutely made sense. It was probably the right thing to do. But now the next thing should be, what's this going to do to our COVID tracking data? And if you're a fourth grader, you should say it's going to screw up our tracking data. Because there's going to be people that are down here from COVID that never had COVID. I mean, am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not accusing a doctor. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying at the end of the day, you're going to have numbers here that if there's any doubt whatsoever that somebody might have had COVID, it's on there, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So it was another good idea that has repercussions that aren't so hot. Maybe. And this all has to be thought through, but I'm not saying it's easy. Same way as this vaccine distribution. Now Biden came out and said he's going to do 100 million in 100 days. How do you go from, what do you think they're doing today, 100,000 maybe? We're going to go from 100,000 to 1 million a day through the same mechanism we have now? How the hell are you going to do that, Jeff?
And well, to your point earlier, there are certainly ways to achieve that, just not just if you're looking at the trend, it's hard to get from A to B, but there's so many distribution centers, and I forget the numbers out of China that showed their vaccination dissemination, what the rate they achieved, and the numbers were pretty impressive. Of course, those aren't fair comparisons, by the way. It's not fair to look at the spread of a virus in Singapore, you know, a semi-authoritarian state versus the United States. So, of course, it's easy to get people to line up in China and get a vaccine. You know, distribution issues are a little less complicated there. And since everybody is viewed as one in terms of the citizens, there aren't the equity considerations that that get in the way of our politics.
Jeff, if you were to, in this country, so many people have relatives and so forth in nursing homes. If you can take those people in nursing homes and vaccinate them, and you were to say anybody over 60 can come to St. John Fisher's gym next Saturday, and oh, by the way, once you get these two things, you can go visit your mother at the nursing home, you'd be overwhelmed by people, Jeff. I mean, everybody wants to be able to
that's
go.
That's true. They would come to the.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's a very good point. Yeah.
But why does it have to be Walgreens?
Well, here,
why does
let's make it very simple. We've learned on voting day, on election day, how many people you can get to come to one place.
Yeah.
This has the same urgency. In fact, there's your model right there. You want to achieve massive rollout. Just make the same polling places that people went to 2 months ago, the distribution centers, and you're done. It's that simple.
Well, you're not you're fortunately younger. I saw all this. I never got a polio shot in the doctor. They came to the school. They wanted everybody vaccinated. How could we pull this off in 1957 and we can't do it now? I mean, what's wrong with this picture? Right?
That is correct. That is right.
But how do the names get in there? How does the United Center even get in there? Why does it have to be Dodger Stadium? Why can't it be the Little League Field in the neighborhood, for God's sake? Yeah. I mean, are these people paying for this? Or, I mean, we can't. The lobbyists are right there. We can't do anything without talking to these people. I mean, does somebody have to get the PR piece out of this? Something's wrong. But the interesting part is the people in New York. Now the governor there. Now he wants to go buy the stuff from. And you and I think, and all the listeners, and I went over it a couple times. Not that everybody memorized everything, but the government's already paid for these vaccines. Right, they bought the 100 million vaccines from Pfizer at $12 a pop, or actually $18 because they didn't give any money up front. So Pfizer's getting there. Now, how exactly does Mr. Goofball in New York gonna intercept him there, and he's gonna pay them a $10 bonus to renege on the deal with the federal government? I mean, is that what he's talking about? What are we talking about here? Is that what he's trying to do, to intercept like the mob would? You paid for the whiskey, but we're gonna go rob the truck along the way. Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, not clear.
By the way, if you notice the country, the state that has had the most success at putting their vaccines out there, you would never guess, is West Virginia.
And why is that?
He went through the Mont Pab pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
He says we have all these independent pharmacies; we just use them. People went there and got vaccinated.
Yeah.
It's astounding to me how the simplest. Hey, by the way, the state, Maddie's still not giving me his answer. The state at which more U-Hauls have had one-way trips to in the last year, meaning I guess people are moving there. Now again, I wonder. I bet
I could name probably the top five. I don't know if I could do it in order, but I could probably name
go
the top
ahead.
Five. I would say Florida. I would say I would say they're not in the top five.
They're in the top five. Yeah.
Well, then why did you say?
Actually, you know what? They might not be. Let me get the article. They might not be because they dropped precipitously.
I would say Florida's in the top five for sure. I would say Texas is in the top five for sure. I would say
Texas for sure.
Probably Georgia, North Carolina, probably Tennessee, probably Arizona. I think I named six there. I would say that. I bet I'm close on those top six. Because they're all warm, they're all low income tax, and it's all open states from COVID.
Well, you didn't get all
say,
of them.
Idaho, Nevada.
Nobody got the first one.
Wyoming?
What's the first one?
Tennessee.
I did say Tennessee.
You didn't say them number one.
Chief, I said I'll name the top five. I don't know what order. And okay. So name the top five.
Well, you didn't name Ohio.
So I named Tennessee. Okay,
Ohio's in the top five. Which
okay, I missed Ohio. I'm surprised by Ohio.
I said number
one. Oh, you're... I say, all right, well, I'm withdrawing. I was thinking on a percentage basis. Here, you must be talking raw numbers.
Yes.
Yeah, got it.
I would never have guessed Tennessee as number one.
I guess Tennessee. What else?
The reason why I wouldn't, because is Texas... He's got like, in the last 10 years, he's got like 2.5 million people have moved there.
I assume Texas and Florida are in the top five?
Yeah, it's Tennessee, Texas, Florida, Ohio, and Arizona.
Okay, so I got four out of the five.
I
wouldn't have guessed Ohio.
No, me neither.
Why would you go to Ohio?
I don't know. I mean, I would never surely. Do people know that Carl moved to Tennessee? Why would they be number one if they knew Carl was there?
I knew it would be states that have no income or low income tax or none. It'd be warm weather, and it would be open from COVID.
Would you have guessed Missouri 7? I would not.
They're open. I mean, it's a lot of people that that don't want to be in a state that's completely shut down are going to states that are not shut down. I have friends that have spent the whole, basically the entire COVID period in Florida just because they're like, it's open in Florida.
I'll read you the 10. Tennessee, Texas, Florida, Ohio. Arizona, and we were all pretty good on that. Although Tennessee, you could have put me under one of those lamps to keep people talking. I would never come up with Tennessee, Colorado, Missouri, Nevada, North Carolina, and Georgia. You know, I'm kind of surprised that in here is New Mexico.
You ever been there?
Well, it's kind of, it's like Arizona, right?
I've been there. Yeah, it's like Arizona except without the big city.
Santa Fe is pretty nice, though.
Yeah, I've been to Santa Fe and Albuquerque, and they're both...
Would you go skiing, or would you...
No, I was just down there once on business and once just driving through. But they're fine, but it's Arizona, I mean, it's pretty brown, just kind of desolate and outside of Phoenix. In New Mexico, there is no Phoenix.
The people who moved to Santa Fe love it. They're the artsy kind of people, but I've never skied there, have you?
I have not.
It's supposed to be pretty halfway decent skiing. I'm not so sure I'd go to Georgia. North Carolina, I could. Anyway, my question, we'll think about this on the break. Would there be a difference between people that used the U-Haul and went themselves versus people that had a moving van take them? Would you get a statistical difference in that? S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 96. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Smiley, Mr. Matt Weber. This is Jeff Joseph. Just by the way, when I worked for Allied Van Lines guys in 1977, and obviously a major moving company, and every people always moved in the summertime back then because kids were out of school. Now, of course, you can move anytime you want. By the end of July, all the vans were all south. They were all in Arizona, New Mexico, California, even then. So this is not something new. Now, here's one for you tomorrow, Matty Weber. What do you do with all the one-way U-Haul trucks in Tennessee? What do you do with them down there? You get somebody to drive them back or what?
Good question. I always wondered that.
Well, we had a big problem in Allied. How do you get them back here? You ended up having to deadhead them back, which you never wanted to do, right?
Yeah.
S&P futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 98, Dow futures up 210. Individual stocks, Bloomberg American Express up 245. Goldman Sachs up 739. They came out with earnings that were very strong. Bank of America not so strong. They're down a little bit. Jeff, we comment after we're done with this. Gee, do you think Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, the guys that are talking about bond trading, are you getting a connection with the people that are trading against and with the government are doing better than everybody else? Just saying. I mean, it's just a thought. Don't want to expound on that, but just a thought. DAX up 26.2%, FTSE up 1 point, call that flat. CAC around up 2, let's call that flat. So Europe is nothing here this morning. Asia, major mixed here. This is crazy. Nikkei up 391. That's 1.4%. Shanghai down 30. That's 0.8%. And Hang Seng up 779, 2.7. Which, I'm not sure what that's going on over there, but very odd. Bonds, 10-year 1.10. The Bund minus 0.51. Japan positive 0.04. So not much change there. Oil up 19 cents, 52.55. Brent up 66 cents, 55.41. Natural gas down 13 cents, 260. RBOB unchanged, 153. The, in the burbs, Matty, the average price I'm going to say was about 235. So that's what I had to fill up the Suburban at 235. Gold up 620, 1836. Silver up 31 cents, 2518. Copper up 3 cents, 363. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the inbound Kennedy at Austin. That's exit 82C, blocking the left lane coming inbound from the northwestern suburbs, so keep that in mind. That's the only crash on the north side expressways. Eden's looking okay. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford down south. We also have an issue, it looks like, on I-80 westbound side at Harlem. There's a crash on the entrance ramp to the I-80 westbound side. Apparently, there's a light pole on top of a car right now with crews on the scene working to get that cleaned up. But that's affecting 80 westbound at Harlem, right on the exit ramp there. Only other crash in the area is in the northwestern suburbs, Irving Park Road at Barrington Road. There is a crash. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, cloudy and cold. Some snow flurries in the area. Not expecting too much for accumulation, but there will be some snow. Could get a dusting. A high of 29. Right now it's overcast and 23 degrees downtown. Wind chills in the low teens. For our Phoenix listeners, rain in the forecast today and a high of 73. Right now it's cloudy and 62. In sports, the Bulls have won two in a row and are playing pretty good ball of late. They beat the Rockets last night 125-120. Suns lost to the Grizzlies 108-104. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. They're at the Panthers tonight. That's a 6 p.m. Central Time puck drop. Coyotes lost to the Golden Knights 4-2. Chief.
Hey, Jeff, it was real quick, question from out of the blue here.
Okay. Then I have some questions for you, by the way.
Oh, that's fine. I just maybe you can, if you can answer me this, my respect for you is going to go from very, very high to off the chart. I'm looking at this is like a new thing on this debt clock here. If you look at U.S. federal spending official, we're $6.6 trillion. $6.651, we have spent, whatever, I guess it's the last year. Even though the thing's ticking away, it must be a calendar year. The federal budget deficit is 3.1. So we're spending over twice as much as we're taking in, which is real bad. I mean, I think the only time we probably have done that in our history would be, where would you guess, 1943, 44, 45, somewhere in there, probably, 42?
Here's something that I'm totally
astounded at. It says U.S. federal spending actual. This combines the on-budget and off-budget totals to derive consolidated totals for federal activity.
Oh, that's much, much bigger than our actual U.S. federal spending, because that's a budgeted number. So the actual number is probably $7 trillion. You know,
they're saying it's 8. But the official is 6.6 and the actual is 8.0.
8.0?
Yeah, deficit.
Yeah.
So right. Essentially we're spending $1.4 trillion that we're not telling anybody about, or it's off.
Sure.
But the interesting part is there's no corresponding money that we're not telling anything about. So the spending is $1.4 trillion above what we're telling people, and the deficit is $1.4 trillion. It's like there's no secret income coming someplace that they're telling. Mm-hmm. So how the hell, I mean, we're talking about if the federal spending actual, this is what's got me so bizarrely crazed about this thing. You look at the tax revenue. Okay, now if you look at payroll tax revenue, it's $1.3 trillion. Now that's in one pocket, out the other, right? Coming in for Social Security, going out for Social Security, payroll in for unemployment. So you can't count on that, right? But your total income tax revenue is $1.6 trillion. I'll throw some tariffs on there. Say we're up to $1.7 trillion, all right? Are we getting in tax revenue?
Sure.
We've got almost...
Well, that's just income tax, though. That's not total federal tax revenue.
Okay,
right?
What I'm saying is you're not going anywhere with the payroll tax, because that's in one hand and out the other.
Sure, gotcha.
So what I'm saying is that we're basically off balance sheet. We've got almost as much money as we're taking in income tax. That's how big this is becoming. And Janet Yellen's, she's talking $3 trillion. We're talking 2 years of income tax revenue.
Right. Yep.
That's astounding. That's worse than the number to me. That's astounding. That's right. So if you add up the whole last year, we could be as money as 5 years worth of tax revenue we've spent / pissed away in 1 year.
There has to be a new word for redistribution, because... that applies. It's been distributed. It goes beyond redistribution because you're borrowing to redistribute.
But didn't I read it? And help me with this, Maddie, because if you can dig it up, because I'm probably wrong. Isn't it supposed to be like $500 billion for vaccine distribution? For God's sake, how much? $500 billion is a real lot of money, Jeff. How can you spend that on vaccine distribution? I'd love to see how those numbers add up. Everybody in the country, that everybody knows, has got to be getting greased on that. I mean, how do you remotely, you know, you put three people in a van and you pay them $35 an hour or $50 an hour with benefits. That's 150 times 8 is what? Say, was that $1,200 a day plus the van? So it's $2,000 a day, and you can do probably 400 people a day. How the hell do you get the 500 billion? I mean, what even? I just can't even. Anyway, get some questions for me. Fire away.
I got questions for you. Well, because we've done this before, we just wrapped up our latest issue of Luckbox. It's at the printer. Of course, it's free digitally. Go to getluckbox.com, and you can receive our award-winning digital magazine subscription for free in digital format. And this next issue is all about IQ and intelligence. We did, as you know, every issue is a deep dive, and this one was all about intelligence and measuring IQ and what its value is, how it's been misinterpreted. And we interviewed supposedly the smartest man in America, Chris Langan, has a immeasurable IQ off the charts. He's broken several machines. It's estimated to be somewhere around 195 to 200. So Chris is one of the premier interviews, and he was an interesting guy. I'd even say he was kind of a piece of work. So that was interesting enough. Who else is in there? But, you know, and then, of course, we worked very closely with Mensa on the issue itself and understanding IQ data. But here's some data for you. I thought we'd have some fun with this. There's a test called the Wunderlich test. Maddie, I my guess is you may know it because it's been used by the NFL for the last 30 years.
Yep.
On draft picks, and it's the equivalent of an IQ test. It measures cognitive ability. At one point, Mensa was accepting Wunderlich scores for entrance into or consideration, considerable scores to be accepted into Mensa, in the same way SAT scores were once accepted, but they no longer are because of implied cultural biases and some of the questioning. But Wunderlich has been in the NFL for about 30 years. It's a 12-minute test of 50 questions, and it's really how many questions you get right determines your score from 0 to 50, 50 being the highest score. So almost every NFL player has taken this test. So there's some interesting data. And my questions to you, and the average is about 20 to 21 of NFL players. That's the average score on this 50-question test that you take in 12 minutes. Which position has the highest average score?
Offensive line.
Players in which NFL position?
Offensive line.
Very good. Offensive tackle, absolutely. And then centers are next. So offensive tackle. That's great, by the way. That's a great answer. It goes offensive tackle, center, quarterback. 26, 25, 24.
And the guards are a bunch of dummies?
let's see. So the lowest? How about the three lowest, if you can name them?
I'm going to say halfback and wide receiver.
You're nailing it. Halfback the worst, fullback then wide receiver. That's exactly right. So
where do they find a fullback
and then,
to take the test?
Here, I'll shoot some scores. I'll shoot some people at you. Ryan Fitzpatrick versus Lamar Jackson.
Oh, I would have no idea.
Well, Fitzpatrick, I think, went to Harvard.
Okay. I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know the guy, so.
He did. Fitzpatrick went to Harvard.
I would say
had
Fitzpatrick.
Had a 1560 on his SAT back when it was out of 1600 and has a third, well, he's tied for first. There's three people that have had the highest Wunderlich scores in NFL history, and he's one of them.
Can I back up a quick second on Jeff? Last time I amazed Maddie by saying, when I took my IQ test back in going into high school, it was, and it wasn't, let's put it this way, it wasn't culturally, it turned out to be, you know, based on, you know, not so good, because it depended a lot on the education you had before, but it was a very simple test. It was designed to test how far along you were in the educational system as it was currently put together. It's all tested. So it was mental age over physical age times 100. So if you were at the educational age of a 13-year-old and you were only 10, you're what, 130? Simple? Mm-hmm. Simple calculation. But once you get past that, once you get to be in your 20s or 30s and you start talking about general knowledge, you're talking about deductive ability, math ability, artistic ability, be able to think of something nobody's thought of before, how do you test any of that and call it an IQ? I mean, how do you even go there? I mean, I let's put it this way. I was considered to have a very high IQ when they took it when we were in high school. And ever since then, all I see is people that are a lot smarter than me. They're more imaginative. They can draw. I can't. I don't see how you even go about doing that. I mean, to the point where this guy's a 180, this guy's a 190. What is the measure? What's the test? Because some people, I mean, Einstein probably couldn't put his pants on right. But still, I mean, where would you put him? 9 zillion?
Well, no. So let's actually do that. So we went deep into it. You know, that's what we do with our issues.
That's why I'm asking you the question.
There is zero question that IQ is a relevant data point. There's also no question that it's not the only data point. So people with high IQs, like the Mensa members, are three times more likely to make $100,000 a year than the average population. There's voluminous data like that is compelling, that is well vetted, and it goes back to Charles Murray's book, The Bell Curve, you know, which of course is controversial, but for very different reasons. But there is zero question that data, that higher IQs, and you're talking, your question is how do you measure it, and that's a separate question, but let's assume that there is a good testing manner to measure cognitive abilities, that higher IQs result in higher outcomes. There is zero question about that. There is also no question that it's not the only factor, and that lower IQs can be offset by grit and determination, and they're actually considered to be extremely relevant factors, and that makes sense. But the data sets are rarely disputed. The interpretations of the data, which is where Charles Murray went wrong, that's what is fairly disputed, particularly when they've led to some things like eugenics and other, you know, awful, tragic consequences from generalizing people about IQ. But you used an example, so let's go to that. I think you said Einstein. Einstein's IQ was 160. So I'll ask
according
you
to
an
who?
Over-under.
According to who?
Albert Einstein was 160, so here's an over-under question.
I know, but I'm saying, according to who?
According to there's about four different tests right now that you can take that measure IQ. You can't do them online. They're in person. The online tests are usually scams. But Mensa, if you want to join Mensa, you can go to Mensa.com or Mensa.org. There's a $10 practice test that you can take. It'll tell you if you should take the Mensa test, you know, if you think you're going to be close. You need 132 to be in consideration. It'll tell you if you are a candidate. There might be a little marketing in there because I took it and it told me my IQ is somewhere between 116 and 139. So they give you a big
spread,
gap.
Yeah.
So yeah, come on in, pay the $100.
Well, we're totally off the wall different than the one I took.
Completely. Yeah. What you took would not be used as an IQ test.
Right.
There are only four different tests right now that are accepted as IQ tests, and these are long tests. They are two-hour sits. You get your results back, not the same day. And for Mensa consideration, there's Stanford-Binet, there's Welcher. I forget the names of the other two tests, but they're comprehensive. They take 2 hours, and you're not going to get a quick IQ test from
online. But is the... I'm asking questions here, because let me put it this way. The smartest man I ever met by far was a guy at Pullman, a Jewish fellow named Marty Leno, who, believe it or not, Jeff, talk about horrible, has serious Alzheimer's. I cannot imagine Marty not being the smartest person I ever met. I can't imagine the man not knowing his own name, for God's sake. When I think of it, I shudder. But here's a guy that was brilliant starting out, Torah scholar the whole bit, and then he kept going to school. He stopped going to school when his kids were when they started going to college. So he's an engineer. He's the guy I was talking about earlier. He's the helicopter engineer. His family was in the heating and air conditioning business, so he knew all about that. The guy never stopped learning. There wasn't a subject. I used to wind around the office or the factory, and just whenever he wasn't busy, I'd just drop in and talk to the guy for a half hour. You couldn't possibly walk out of there not knowing a lot more than you. Now, does that make him IQ brilliant, or just had a thirst for learning and never stopped?
It's a great question, and I like that you brought it up, because I thought that was a little bit of a discovery for us, you know, the editorial team working through this. We ended up doing about 15,000 words on IQ and maybe 8 or 9 different stories and perspectives. Continually challenging yourself in new fields is a very distinctive trait of high IQ people. So people who want to take up an instrument or learn a new language in their 30s or 40s or take up a new physical activity, taking up new games like chess or bridge or Sudoku, all those things, anyone who continues to challenge themselves is a trait consistent with high IQ people.
Because, I mean, it's just, I mean, I think that I have learned more since I started doing the show than I ever have at any other time in my life, except for maybe college or grad school. Now, does that mean I just enjoy doing it? It doesn't make me smarter. It just means I enjoy doing it. I think. I mean, there's a thirst for it. I mean, maybe it keeps me younger. I don't know. But, I mean, I love it. Well, I learn something every day for you guys. I mean, it makes my day.
So another interesting thing is IQ is not obviously the only outcome, right? So there's the stories of people. The most famous is this guy named Cetus that we talked about.
Yeah, I remember that.
William James Cetus. He was reading newspapers when he was 18 months old. He learned 25 languages by the age of 8. He entered Harvard at age 11. He wrote a theory on the origin of life at the age of 20 and patented a perpetual calendar when he was 30, and he ended up dying at the age of 44 after spending the last 10 years of his life collecting subway tokens. So here's supposedly the highest IQ guy in the country ever, somewhere around 250, like off the charts, but you know, never amounted to anything. But hold on, let me go back to some of these others. So Einstein at 160, Carl Sagan, higher or lower?
Refresh me in the name, because I was
Carl Sagan. We'll use Stephen Hawking. But
okay.
Stephen
Hawking. I don't even know where you'd put that guy. I mean,
169. Elon Musk, 165. Conan O'Brien, 160.
Really?
He's tied with Gates and Einstein and Steve Jobs. I thought that was interesting.
Well, so, there's a difference to me between that type of. I mean, I couldn't begin to do it what Einstein did. There was a mathematician, and I forget the name, that he died when he was like, what? I was, in anticipation of you talking about this last time, I actually Googled, like, the smartest people ever, and he had some guy on there who died when he was like 35, and he said he did some math stuff when he was in his teenage years that if it wasn't for him, Einstein couldn't have started with I don't forget the guy's name, but it was some young guy in Europe in like, you know, 1910, 1920 era, that said he did some stuff where he pushed Newton's stuff and everybody else further. If it wasn't for him, none of these other guys would even existed. And he only lasted until he was like 30 or something. But, I mean, to think of something nobody else ever thought about, to me, this other stuff I can get myself. I can read and remember. I can't do that. That, to me, is what I can't draw. I mean, the stuff that you can't do is the stuff you're jealous of, I think. I am. And if I draw a stick man, he'd be a big fatso.
Well, let's see. Not a lot of artists on the list, believe it or not. Let's see. Oh, Shakira, 140. Same with Vin Diesel, 140 of all people.
Wow.
Putin's at 127. Miley Cyrus at 120. So it's an interesting issue. And then, of course, you know, the general data, it says roughly 40% of...
Where do they have Roosevelt?
Billionaires, judges, CEOs, and senators.
Armin Hammer said
top 1% of cognitive ability. So top 1% puts them over a 135 IQ.
Armin Hammer said the two smartest men he ever met were Roosevelt and Lenin.
The presidential data isn't very good because they're, you know, a lot of it's anecdotal and as opposed to anything that could be vetted in terms of what presidents actually scored. Somebody did a histronomic recording of IQ, which was basically trying to back into an IQ number in the absence of real test results, and that was done on the first 43 presidents, and that put Roosevelt number one. But no one thought, we didn't even publish that data because the validity of it was really questionable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how you would value that, and that's all my questions. By the way, I love the subject, but because in those days you didn't get elected. Well, you didn't get, if he was elected like Biden did, you didn't get in the office to what, March? You didn't get in January. You didn't get you're president-elect until March.
Wow, that's a long, lame duck.
Oh, God, yeah. And,
yeah, when did that change?
You know, Brendan mentioned, I don't know if it did it all at once or it did it on a couple of stages, but they said between November and March, he entertained the equivalent, that he wasn't a huge reader. He entertained the equivalent of, like, how many people per day in every walk of life, every industry between November and March. And by March, the guy had such an incredible memory that of everything that everybody told him about in any industry that he was like an expert on just about everything because he had this totally photographic memory. But I don't know, the guy could do a math problem to save his life. You know, so I don't know how you equate one to the other.
Well, check out the IQ issue. It's coming at you soon. I've got one more quick thing. I know we're running out of time, but we did predictions last time I was on because we did our prediction issue. And I do want to mention that we've been doing pretty well with my 20 predictions. Already four of them, you know, obviously CRISPR, the stock, is up over 100% from when I recommended it as a soaring stock in the prediction. Yang did announce that he's running for New York mayor, and Trump was banned from Twitter. So we're already on a roll. So I got a quick question for you guys today because I don't think it's come out yet. Who do you think the most controversial pardon will be today? Let's make a prediction.
His kids.
Yeah. I'd say no on that one.
You don't think
he's gonna do that? I'll go with Assange or Snowden, and I don't know why, but I think one of them is going to be pardoned. Assange, probably not Snowden.
Yeah, that's a...
Maddie, what do you think?
I was the only one that even came to mind was Snowden for me, besides his family.
Maybe,
but I don't think
he's Rush Ulbricht, you know, that'd be an interesting one. That's a possibility. He's the that dark web, the Silk Road founder. I think that will be the fun news story today. We'll see what happens there.
Let's talk next week about the whole Snowden thing, because I think everybody needs a little refresher on that.
Let's do it.
Think he's going to pardon himself?
No.
I'm just saying. I mean, I've heard that. I don't think he will either. I'm asking you. SP Futures up 24. NASDAQ Futures up 92. Maybe he'll pardon Matty Weber.
Somebody needs to.
I don't think your wife will buy it. We'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.